The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Hey, first of all, Aubrey, are you an Oasis fan?
Not really. I'm too young.
I really am.
Are you?
I would give my right arm to be going. I was one of those people with multiple devices and multiple Ticketmaster accounts, but no joy at the end of it.
Because it's funny, I don't remember there being that much attention and joy and passion about seeing them live the first time round, was there?
Of course there was, but at the same time, it's also nostalgia. And I mean, you see that now. I was at a gig in Fairview Park recently, and it's all about nostalgia. I think people in their late 30s, early 40s want to relive their youth, and let's give people the chance to do that.
If you want to get in touch, 53106 or 087 1400 106 on WhatsApp. A lot of politics in the papers today, including suggestions that what had been flown as a bit of a kite, that maybe Joe Duffy might have a look at the Auras, is now becoming something a bit more realistic. Because, Aubrey, there's suggestions that Labour have been... The image is quite something, but putting feelers out to Joe.
I see the Independent today certainly is emphasising that Joe might be considering it, and so that's getting traction. I mean, he's a fantastic broadcaster. He's now saying he's not giving any interviews for the next while because he's taking a break after retiring, and he was certainly professional. Whether that works in the Auras, I don't know, but he certainly has the name recognition. And he's one of, I mean, many, many people that have been named. And if you look at in the Irish Times today, it has a list of all the people, and I think the only person that's not named is yourself.
Yeah, any minute now. I'm keeping my fingers crossed for it, Aubrey. Eimear, there's also a story that says that in the Fianna Fáil particularly has sent instructions to local councils to effectively toe an almost whip party line and make sure that no single independents get through the county council system. Is that appropriate?
Well, that's the system that we work in. Absolutely. I mean, if you have politically affiliated councillors, they would usually toe the political line. That would be fairly understandable. I know last time round I was a councillor when we had independents in particular coming round to local authorities seeking nominations, and we didn't support those because we had our own Fine Gael candidate at that time. And of course, Fine Gael is the only party at the moment, I think, who have outlined their strategy in terms of how we're going to select a candidate to go forward. We're very definite about the fact that we will have a candidate, and nominations will open actually on Monday for members of Fine Gael to be able to put forward who they think is the desired candidate. I think we aim to have our person in place by the start of September or so.
And presumably you want that process to take as long as possible because it takes some of the heat off whatever individual ends up being the candidate if they're not definite until closer to the race starting.
Well, the main thing we want to do is run a transparent competition. We'd obviously, I know personally speaking, I'm hopeful that there'll be a competition. I'm hopeful that more than one person will put their name in the ring because us politicians always love a political campaign.
Even if Mairead McGuinness walks away with it at the end.
Well, listen, that's politics, isn't it? And I have to say, I think she's done tremendous work for Ireland, both as an MEP and as a commissioner. She absolutely has. And I know Sean Kelly is 50-50 about putting his name forward as well. So, listen, exciting times ahead for those of us in Fine Gael because all of our members will have a vote if this goes to competition.
A couple of big hitters from your party have ruled themselves out very early on, Francis Fitzgerald being one, Enda Kenny being another. Are you sad to see people not putting their hats in the ring? Because either of those would have been seen as a very strong candidate.
They would have, absolutely. And particularly, I suppose, Frances Fitzgerald was my predecessor in my constituency, so would have definitely loved to see her name go forward for sure.
You talked about the process by which the councils select or give the nod to independents. What actually happens? Do they come in and do a little presentation and answer questions, or is it informal, or what's the structure of it?
Yeah, that's my recollection of it. So I can recall being there when David Norris came to us in South Dublin County Council, and he commended our chamber and said he'd seen many of them at this stage, and gave a presentation, and I think there's the opportunity to speak to them informally as well. It's an important part of democracy, of course it is, and listen, maybe we'll get a dark horse come through that route, but from us in Fine Gael, we're very clear we're going to have a candidate. We have a selection process now in place. Nominations open on Monday. So we're very excited about that, and that will be our candidate. And that's why I suppose we're asking our Fine Gael councillors to support our Fine Gael candidate.
Should we be looking again, Aubrey, at that system? Because putting it in a position where you either need main party nomination or quasi-main party nomination if you're going through the local councils, it is quite the obstacle to completely free democracy.
It is. And, you know, you need 20 Oireachtas members are four county councils. But if you look at the front page of the Daily Mail today, and it's talking about the diktat from Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, so that not outsiders cannot be considered. But you have to be very careful, because as we know from the recent referendum, the Irish public don't like being told what to do. And we must remember that the presidency isn't the property of any individual political party. So we have to be, we have to make sure that there's a fair process. I think the presidential race is a time for the Irish, the people to shine and the candidates put themselves forward, but it can be very cruel. And you saw, you mentioned different names that have been ruled out. And I'd say the process is too cruel. And you look what happened to Eddie Roach, you look what happened to Sean Gallagher, David Nairn, and it was horrendous what they had to go through. So it's a pity, as they say, they play the person rather than the ball.
Although I suppose there's little choice, because if you're in party politics seeking election, you're seeking it on a policy mandate. If you're in the presidency, you expressly can't have a policy mandate, so it becomes entirely about you, the individual.
It becomes a personality contest, and therefore, whoever, even you mentioned Joe Duffy at the start, because he's so well known, everybody knows him from the airwaves, he immediately starts ahead of the rest of them if he was to put his name forward. And also, you look at President Higgins, there's big shoes to fill.
Metaphorically.
Metaphorically. And in that, look at what he's done over the last 14 years, all about social inclusion, all about promoting Ireland. He was Minister for Arts. So he certainly was a strong president. So anybody to follow in those footsteps would certainly have to be strong and a unifying candidate.
Is there a risk, Eimear, that the methodology by which we run those elections will allow people subsequently to claim martyrdom? If you look, for instance, at Conor McGregor, he has been shouting for months that he is going to run for presidency. All of the analysis says he has almost no route to election by virtue of the system. Does he then get to use that subsequently? And I use him just as an example of the issue. Does he then get to say subsequently, I was squeezed out by the system and this is anti-democratic?
Well, the system is our democracy for a start, so I don't think you can claim anti-democratic operating within a democratic system. And I suppose, personally speaking, I wouldn't be shedding tears in that situation.
On the topic of McGregor's former career as a UFC fighter, there's reports in the papers today, Aubrey, that every time you get to, I think we've reached peak odd with the current American administration, you get a new thing you weren't expecting. UFC at the White House.
Do you know, when Trump in his first term, I used to wake up and look at his tweets first thing, because that was my entertainment for the day. You were always wondering what's next. So UFC at the White House, we must remember that Donald Trump is an entertainer. You have The Apprentice and all the rest. So we've more entertainment. The problem here is you're turning the White House into a theatre. It's something that certainly will garner attention, and he certainly will get a vote base that'll applaud him for this. As Eimear says, I don't know if Conor would be able to do that on the front lawns of Ors an Uachtaráin, but certainly that's what is being proposed in the White House.
And I suppose there are issues to ask about. I mean, apart from the whether or not it is appropriate to use a significant historical building for this purpose, the enrichment of people like Dana White off the back of this, it's an interesting Venn diagram overlap between politics and business, isn't it?
But you look at all, throughout the candidacy of Donald Trump, Dana White was always there. He was always promoted. Donald would turn up at the fights, etc. He was center stage. So I think that has always worked. You look at Elon Musk. Look at the people he's had. Remember his inauguration, all the billionaires in the front row and all the government people somewhere down the back. So you sort of go, this has been the process that President Trump has followed.
There's the oddest now sort of cultural set, societal set in power. Because Dana White, you mentioned the billionaires at the inauguration. Dana White, of course, now a board member of Meta and very influential in that way, and was previously a client of Donald Trump's, because I think a lot of the UFC's used Trump venues. It's quite the coterie that is developing.
But we've been talking about the Irish presidency, and when you compare it to the American and the views, Donald Trump could not care less about what people say about him, about what they tweet about him, or what the press says about him. He seems to do the opposite. So it would seem a candidacy in Ireland that would represent something of the same, a hard neck, maybe they'd be successful.
The UFC will make a fortune off this, presumably, though, because what the UFC fundamentally sells isn't bums on seats, it's eyeballs on screens. And the novelty factor of having a big ticket fight in the White House, they will clean up on pay-per-view.
Yeah, listen, nothing like this has ever been done before. And I think we'd be repeating that phrase ad nauseam probably over the next 4 years. I mean, my feeling is that President Trump is treating the whole presidency really like showbiz. And Aubrey referenced that in terms of the A-listers being present, in terms of, I suppose, some of the media appearances. Even when you think of when President Zelensky visited, it wasn't about the meeting, it was about the press conference. It is very much... I don't know. I mean, he's a reality.
But wasn't it ever, though? I mean, they may have used a slightly, well, much more formal methodology. But every president is geared towards what's the press going to say? How is this going to be covered? There was always the boys on the bus.
This is different, though. I mean, yeah, people have had media follow them around and ask questions. And of course, many politicians use that as the opportunity to sell their story, sell their message, for sure. But I do think this time round, things are a little bit different. And I think President Trump is setting the narrative by big decisions like this. But we've seen him change his mind the next day. So let's see what tomorrow brings.
But he hasn't changed his pattern. This is what he has always done. And he was democratically elected. So it seems that this is what the groundswell of people like in America. So maybe UFC on the front lawn of the White House is what they'd applaud.
Inside the papers, there is detail on some of what happened with the DJ Carey frauds. Did you have a chance to have a look at any of it, Aubrey? Because
I do.
I mean, obviously, it is a very sad fall from grace for a sporting star. It is a very unusual and significant fraud trial. But the details of the exploitation of people are something else.
Horrendous. There was a tweet out yesterday, Anton. I don't know if you saw it, and it showed two photos. One of DJ Carey, and it's supposedly in a hospital bed, but he had a phone charger up his nose, and they were saying charging, and then a photo of him going into court, and it says charged. So it's sad, though, when you read Ciara McGeen's her testimony on the front page of the Irish Times today about her own cancer diagnosis. Yeah. This is not something to make fun of. This is not something to fake in order to get money. And two events in my calendar every year, I do a charity auction for the Cancer Trials Ireland and also for Crumlin Children's Hospital, and you meet the families of people who have absolutely been devastated by a cancer diagnosis. And then you read in the papers this week about a man who has made tens of thousands of pounds of euros by pretending that he had cancer. I think it's unforgivable.
And I suppose to some extent, I mean, obviously it is always both morally and criminally wrong, but you sort of assume, well, there must have been a bankruptcy. You must have been on your uppers. It must have been desperation. You don't think, well, it was a desire to go to the Super Bowl.
But this was this happened over time. So you know the way, if you pull a fast one, maybe 10 years, you don't pull a fast one the next. So it seems to have been a process. And I know there's another member of the same family that was accused of fraud. So it's horrendous. And I think the different people that genuinely wanted to help a friend of theirs in trouble with cancer, they're now testifying to say they were total, the wool was pulled over their eyes.
Well, that's the thing. There must be so many people. I mean, a list, I think that the victim list was up to about 10 or 12 people, but they must be absolutely furious.
13, I think, Anton, 13 victims. I just couldn't imagine being one of those, and I couldn't imagine what went through his head. I mean, it's fraud of an unbelievable level, really was. I mean, Relay for Life, the Irish Cancer Society, run that in communities up and down the country this time of year. And it's where volunteers do a full 24 hours walking in Relay. And the whole idea behind that is it represents, in the daytime, everyone's there, everyone's cheering you on. But at nighttime, it's cold, it's lonely, it's dark. You're wondering, are you ever going to get through this? And I mean, he has really taken that experience that unfortunately so many people have to go through and turned it into profit. Like, it's unbelievable.
I don't know what the outcome of the trial will be, but I genuinely hope that the judge says, I want DJ Carey to visit St. John's Ward and Crumlin's Hospital and see people who are affected by this in real terms.
One final thing before we wrap up. Eimear, just want to get a view from you. There was a story, coverage suggesting that the HPAT, so the test designed to add a layer beyond just pure academics to access for medicine, revelations that kids are being coached through it successfully, and it therefore means that the kids of the rich have a better chance of becoming doctors than the kids of the poor.
Well, listen, I think that needs to be reviewed for sure, if there's any indications that that might be the case, because that's not the system we live in Ireland. We actually have one of the most transparent and one of the most accessible third level education systems in the world.
We do a very two-tier, though. You can go, if you have the money, you can go to a grind school, you can get private tutoring, you can get all that kind of stuff, which greatly increases your chances.
But there's also the other end of that spectrum where you mightn't be very academically inclined, and now we've got apprenticeships in everything imaginable. I mean, I was was at an apprenticeship graduation only the other week for ICT graduates who are now all working in the civil service in cyber security, in IT. It's actually incredible. And there's pathways for everybody now. But we absolutely need to check and see if that is happening, because that as an experience shouldn't be the case. And by the way, Anton, I think what we need to do is invest to make sure we're having more and more places for doctors at third level, because we know the demand is there. And we don't want to see people training abroad and coming back with their skills, as so many people do. That's not sustainable. We want to be training people to be able to be educated, live and work here as doctors.
If you look at the Irish Times magazine today, I was showing Emma earlier, on page 8, there's a profile of a chap that I would have met. He was homeless, on the streets. They're celebrating he's got his second master's degree now, okay? So he was the wrong postcode when it came to education, but he engaged with us at Tig Lynn, and he was sort of our guinea pig for education. And now in the last year, we've had 114 people in third level college doing up to master's level with SETU. So when the Minister for Higher Education, Simon Harris, saw what we did, he invested, and now James Lawless. So education can be life-changing, and it should not be limited to a postal code.
Remind us briefly the work that Tig Lynn does and where people can find out more about you.
So Tig Lynn, we set up Tig Lynn nearly 20 years ago, and it's to help people that are marginalised, poverty, certainly an addiction, mental health issues. So now we've 9 centres, and you possibly would know us best from our outreach cafe on Pier Street, where we feed up to 500 people a day. And that's people that have come undone and want a second chance. And that's what we do, and we do it well. And you hear the most amazing, amazing stories. They would have heard a DJ, Nikki Hayes, talking about her journey last week. So Nikki would have been one of our female graduates. And then today in the Irish Times, Alan Bopanak is sharing his story. Amazing people, dynamic people.
Well, Nikki Hayes, if you missed that, you can go on newstalk.com and have a listen back. She came on our show to talk about her extraordinary experience, and she was absolutely singing the praises of Tig Lynn and the support that you gave her. So as I say, if you want to have a listen back to her story, newstalk.com. Thank you to Aubrey McCarthy, Senator Aubrey McCarthy, co-founder of Tig Lynn, and of course, Emer O'Higgins, TD. Thank you likewise.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.